just around the corner. Early voting is going to be beginning in just a few weeks for the 2020 primary locally and statewide. Of course, a lot of key primaries just around the corner as well, including Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina before we even get to North Carolina on Super Tuesday. Where do things stand in terms of the Democratic presidential primary race? For more on that, we are joined on the phone by Tom Jensen, who's the director of public policy polling based out of Raleigh, publicpolicypolling.com, their website, and you can find them on Twitter at PPP Polls and get more numbers there as well. Tom, good to be with you today.
Hey, Aaron, good to be with you.
So let's start nationally in terms of the Democratic primary race. Still a lot of uncertainty about who's going to come out on top when all is said and done, but where do things stand right now?
Well, it's sort of been interesting. The polls have been a bit of a muddle since the debate last week. For the most part, Joe Biden's still leading national polls, but there was actually one yesterday that came out from CNN that had Bernie Sanders with the lead. So that shows that there's a lot of uncertainty within the pollsters about what's going on. But when you look at the averages nationally, Biden still does have the lead with 29%, followed by Sanders at 22%. And it's really becoming more of a clear top two. We've talked at various points about there sort of being a four-way muddle. But after Biden at 29 and Sanders at 22, you go down another 7 points to get to Warren at 15. And then you go down another 7 points from that to get Michael Bloomberg and Pete Buttigieg both at 8%, tied for fourth. That is one interesting development that we've seen both in our own polling and other polling this month, is that Michael Bloomberg definitely is moving up to being at least as strong as Pete Buttigieg in the national picture, and more and more, maybe a little bit stronger, especially in the Super Tuesday states that he's particularly targeting.
And I have to assume, and I think we talked about this last week too, that's got a lot to do with the fact that he's really putting a lot of attention in terms of ad spending in those states versus the other candidates who really are focusing on those early states. I know personally, I have seen almost no advertising for any other candidate in North Carolina, but I'm seeing Bloomberg ads everywhere.
Yeah, Bloomberg made this conscious choice that he was not going to play in the early states at all. But then you look at states like North Carolina. We did a Texas poll this week that both vote on Super Tuesday. He's up around 10% in those states, mm-hmm. partially because he has the airwaves totally to himself. It was interesting to see while everybody else was in Columbia, South Carolina on Martin Luther King Day, he was in Little Rock, Arkansas, is another one of those states that is voting on Super Tuesday. So I think it's possible that he's actually going to end up becoming pretty relevant in this picture simply because of his resources, if nothing else.
Before we get to Super Tuesday, we've got a few of those early states, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. Where do things stand there?
Well, it's sort of a funny week because the last few Iowa polls have Joe Biden up when he hadn't been up in Iowa in a while. The last few New Hampshire polls not only have Bernie Sanders up, but one that came out today had Bernie Sanders up by double digits. So, you know, that might make you wonder, how is it that Joe Biden has momentum in Iowa and Bernie Sanders has momentum in New Hampshire? I'm not really sure that anybody actually has any momentum. So the two Iowa polls that came out that had Biden in the lead in the last week, both forecast that the electorate was going to be extremely old. They both had only about 20% of voters for the caucus in Iowa being under the age of 45, and then they had something like half of the voters for the caucus being over the age of 65. Well, if those really are the age breakdowns of the electorate, then I agree Biden will probably win because he dominates with seniors and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren dominate with younger voters. Biden does very poor with them. So if the electorate is only seniors and barely any young voters vote, then yes, Biden will win. I don't think that's correct, though. I think that we're actually going to have very robust turnout from younger people, that seniors will only be like a quarter of the electorate as opposed to half the electorate. And then if you take those polls that show Biden winning and show Biden with momentum and account for that, all of a sudden you're back to Biden and Sanders being pretty close to each other in Iowa. So I think it's sort of a false movement to Biden. That's just because of how those polls were conducted. And then in New Hampshire, Sanders definitely seems to have the momentum there. He's leading in the polls without any easily explainable methodological flaw to explain why he's leading in the polls. And it makes sense that he would win New Hampshire. I mean, in 2016, not only did Bernie Sanders win New Hampshire, but he won it by about 20 points. So winning there again would sort of be consistent with what happened last time around.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, publicpolicypolling.com, the website, for more numbers and more information. And you mentioned that you're kind of looking at that one Iowa poll and thinking that turnout among younger voters is going to be robust there. What do you look at to try to make that determination in advance of how the voter breakdown is going to be in terms of younger voters, middle-aged, older voters?
Well, it's certainly very hard to say, but I think one thing that we always look at, first of all, is what's happened in previous elections. And certainly there was a lot more young voter engagement in previous caucuses than these polls are showing. And I don't think there's any reason to think that there's going to be less interest this time around than there were other times around. There's a lot of candidates who have a lot of appeal to younger voters running, who are putting a lot of money into explicit outreach to younger voters. So if the caucus vote was 30%, 30-something percent under 45 in a year like 2016, there's no reason to think it would be lower this year. I think it'll actually probably be higher. Something that's a difficulty for pollsters to contend with, and I think different pollsters come up with different ways of contending with it, and some may be right or wronger, is it's definitely easier to get older people to answer a poll. It's harder to get younger people to answer a poll. I think sometimes pollsters extrapolate that to turnout, that if they can't get young people to answer a poll and they can easily get an older person to answer a poll, that means tons of older people are going to vote and very few younger people are going to vote. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I just think that younger people are more reluctant to take a poll or less likely to pick up the phone, that kind of thing. One thing that was interesting about those two polls that I just said that had Biden up in Iowa, both of them were done completely through telephone calls. They might have called people on their cell phone, but there was no way for people to answer by text or answer over the internet, ways that younger people might prefer to be contacted for a poll. So I'm not surprising in that context that they reach fewer younger people, but that does not, to me, mean that fewer younger people are going to vote. It just means that fewer younger people answer the telephone.
Again, speaking with Tom Jensen, and we got to wrap up, but before we do, right now, those numbers from Iowa and New Hampshire kind of suggesting a two-person race with Biden and Sanders. Is there a path forward right now for other candidates to win, or are you seeing this kind of shaping into essentially a two-person race?
Well, the big thing that Elizabeth Warren and Pete Buttigieg and even Amy Klobuchar have going for them, it's still an unusually open-to-change electorate compared to what we've seen in the past. There's still very few people who say, I know who I'm voting for 100%, and there's no way I'm going to change my mind. So we still see a lot of votes that are out there on the table where people are open to the possibility of shifting their allegiance to somebody else here in the last few weeks before the voting in Iowa or New Hampshire. So I think that still makes it kind of unpredictable. There is still really a chance that somebody could come up from behind and become relevant. And I think in 2012, we really saw the possibility of that happening in Iowa. That year, about 2 weeks out from the caucuses, Rick Santorum on the Republican side was polling at like 5 or 6%. And then he ended up vaulting all the way up in 2 weeks and winning the Iowa caucuses because he just got really hot at the end and kind of took off from there. I think it is possible that you could see something like that happen for somebody again this year. So I don't think that, for instance, even though she struggled in the polling lately, I don't think that means it's over for Elizabeth Warren. I still think there's a chance that somebody from the back of the field could rise up and get some momentum. So I think it'll be interesting, and thank goodness in 11 days we can actually analyze actual votes and not just keep speculating about this.
Publicpolicypolling.com for more information. Find them on Twitter at @PPPpolls for even more. Tom Jensen, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.